they have. I nod. I've known her for 2 hours, but it's the impression I got.
It's not a hard and fast rule. No commitment, no dating, no feeding past midnight. I haven't sworn it off because love is a capitalist construct or some bullshit like that.
He shrugs.
But when I was younger, I was in a couple of relationships where the interest didn't match up, and it's better to be upfront, so no one gets hurt.
I see. I picture a boy being told by his mother that he's not her son anymore, then growing up to hate the idea of telling a woman that she's not his girlfriend anymore. It makes sense, this determination of his. It also makes my heart heavy.
What about you?
He asks. Me?
Do you date?
I smile. For a living.
Right. How did that start?
Oh, I go back to tracing patterns on the glass. In college. It's kind of a depressing story. Does not pair well with cheese. I let out a nervous laugh, hoping he'll laugh too. Instead, he asks,
why depressing?
Honesty. Honesty. It's a thing that I can probably manage. Because I didn't know.
You didn't know you were dating someone?
No, I swallow. I didn't know it was fake. His attention shifts. Still on me, still focused, but more cautious, gentle, landmine territory.
You didn't.
I've never spoken aloud about what happened, not even with Cece, because I'm still not sure how it could have happened to me. It's been years, and it still doesn't feel like my story. I've always been so guarded, so careful-footed. And when I stumbled, I didn't just skin a knee. I fell face down and knocked out all my teeth. When I was a sophomore, this guy I knew moved abroad. The place he rented was cheap, so I took over his rent. That's how I met JJ. He was the roommate. I pushed the glass away. I'd seen him around the physics department, and I thought he was an okay guy. Though he was planning on becoming an experimentalist.
Should have tipped you off.
I laugh. We spent almost one entire year politely ignoring each other. Ideal roommate situation. Then he broke up with his girlfriend. I sigh. It was messy. 20-year-old messy, you know? There were still feelings, but she'd met someone else, and all I know is that a couple weeks later, she came over to pick up her stuff, and she found JJ and me having dinner together while watching something on TV. She went ballistic. She was so jealous, which was hilarious, since JJ and I were sitting 10 feet apart and I was having chickpeas, officially the least romantic food. But that's how JJ got the idea that we should pretend to be together so she'd get even more jealous and, I don't know, race through Boston Logan to confess her undying love. It was a fuzzy plan. But I said yes. Because
you weren't any better than you are now at saying no.
Hey, no personal call-outs. He smiles, and I continue. We started the ruse, and we didn't just fake it on campus when she was around. He told everyone, his friends, my friends, and in my defense, which maybe I have none, but we didn't talk much about the fact that it was fake. He brought me home to his parents for the holidays. We studied together. He taught me how to play Go. Jack nods slowly.
How quickly did you get better than him?
Very too extremely. But I pretended I didn't because he hated losing. He hated not feeling like the smartest person in the room, but he was good at hiding it. He was charming in public, but in private, the insecurities came out and...
Not so charming?
Not really. He was self-centered, but you have to understand, I'd never had lots of friends.
I was always the wallflower, trying not to get noticed. But all of a sudden, I was at the center of someone's universe. We were together all the time. First, just a few weeks, then 6 months. He started kissing me in private, too. Then more than kissing. Then he wanted to have sex.
Did you?
My mouth is dry. Yeah, I did it.
No. Did you want to?
I didn't not want to. I traced my finger against the tablecloth. Mostly I wanted him to have a version of me he could enjoy. Jack's eyes close, and I'm suddenly afraid of what I'll find when he opens them. Disgust. Pity, maybe. Judgment. But no. It's just that deep brown, the slice of color, and a bunch of other things I cannot recognize. It was Elsie and JJ. Everyone said how beautiful a couple we were, and I settled into that. I read the Dune books because they were his favorites. I told myself Dream Theater was good. I did his laundry, cut my hair short because he liked bobs. I felt powerful, like I'd cracked how to be a social human being. I'd learned how to make people want me. I wet my lips. Then his ex asked him to get back together. Jack's jaw tenses. His neck tightens.
And he said that you had to go because your relationship was fake.
I nod. I wasn't even sure if I had the right to be hurt. It was just confusing.
Were you in love with him?
I let out a small laugh and shake my head. Not at all. And it should have made it better, right? That I didn't lose the love of my life, that he was just some guy I only liked because I knew how to please him. But then I realized why it hit me so bad. I have to stop, take a deep breath. I'd tried so hard, given my all to be the perfect Elsie he wanted, and it almost hurts too much to say it.
You gave him a perfect version of you, and he still didn't want you,
Jack says prosaically, almost detached, like I'm a gravitational singularity that can be explained, cataloged, predicted. I'm momentarily stunned by how right he is. Then I'm surprised that I'm even surprised.
And what you took away from it was that you had to try harder.
I nod. Pretty much. The tray of cheese arrives, but my stomach is sealed. JJ's girlfriend wouldn't allow me to live in the apartment, and because the contract was in JJ's name, I had to move out. I didn't really have anywhere left to go, and I'll spare you the details, but it was a mess. I missed tests, assignments, didn't get enough credits to stay on my scholarship. My junior year grades were shit, and the first thing on the transcripts I sent in for grad school applications. I'd wanted to become a physicist for a decade, and because of some guy who sucked at Go, I almost didn't. I forced myself to reach for a piece of Fontina because fuck JJ. It's delicious in my mouth, rich and smooth, sweet and pungent. It makes me forget that I nearly bawled like a 4-year-old in the middle of a fancy fusion restaurant. But my mentor saved me. Jack tenses.
Your mentor?
I nod, picking another cube. Lorindo. The guy whose career Jack accidentally ruined. I'm trying not to think about it, Jack's article, or what Dr. L would say if he knew that I'm here with him. It seems like a good use of my well-honed compartmentalization skills. He saw through the bad grades and the rec letters that said I was flaky, told me I had potential, accepted me into grad school. Everything I've accomplished, I owe to him. Jack scans my face for a long time. Then he exhales slowly and nods once, as if coming to an arduous decision.
Elsie.
My turn to ask a question. I interrupt. I'm done talking about JJ and Dr. L. Since we're on the topic. Jack hesitates, like he's not ready to let go of the subject. What is it?
Olive also said something else. That when you do go out with women, it's usually to... I can't bring myself to utter the words. But it doesn't matter, because Jack looks like he knows exactly what I want to say. I point back and forth between us.
Is that what you want?
He doesn't answer immediately. Instead, he studies me, stern, unreadable, impenetrable, as he hasn't been in a while. And then, after a long beat of choosing words carefully, he slowly says,
"You and I won't be having sex."
"You guys ready to order?" The waitress interrupts us. We don't go back to the topic. And I wonder why the knot of relief in my belly feels so much like disappointment. 18. Flux. My main sentiment going into lunch with Greg is fear, closely followed by self-loathing, guilt, and an uncontrollable impulse to run back home and feed myself to Hedgie. Does he hate me? Does he hold me responsible for outing him? Does he want his money back? He deserves it. I'll sell a cornea, or a foot, whatever goes for highest. As it turns out, I shouldn't have worried, because Greg grins widely the moment he sees me and then asks suggestively,
"You and my brother, huh?"
"Oh, no. No, I..." We're at our usual cafe, but even though today I could use some diversions, there are no screaming toddlers or projectile vomiting or tragic mishearings. Just the barista in a breathe-if-you-hate-Tom-Brady shirt. Me and Greg's winky face. I silently wish for a tectonic earthquake to no avail. We, Jack and I, are just hanging out. There was dinner last Thursday, of course, which ended when he drove me home and answered my, "Do you want to do this again?" with an infuriating, "Do you?" And then the Saturday afternoon spent hunting down the Murder, She Wrote novelization for Millicent and bickering about the validity of string theory.
"It has produced no testable experimental predictions.
We are working on the math."
"Work away. But until you come to me with a substantial breakthrough, the multiverse is as scientific as the Great Pumpkin."
And last night, of course, when he drove me to a Northeastern lecture I was going to attend anyway.
"Or you can take the subway and we can meet there, if you enjoy watching people masturbate to Tropicana ads."
Afterward, we spent 1 hour in his car, trash-talking the speaker for saying that the gravitational wave experiment was a waste of money. It's Tuesday now, and yes, I've seen Jack 3 times in the past week. But if I told Greg, he'd assume that we're a couple, which we aren't. We haven't even held hands. Unless one counts that time I was complaining about the militarization of science and almost got run over by a Honda Civic. He'd grabbed my wrist and pulled me back and hadn't let go until he'd gotten me safely to the other side of the road. Plus, half a block. Whatever this is, it's slow, static, some would say. I may have found myself thinking about kissing. I may have found myself thinking about whether Jack is thinking about kissing. I may have been pitting seemingly conflicting things he said.
"You and I won't be having sex. The girl I liked, really beautiful. It'll go away."
Against each other in a March Madness-like bracket, trying to figure out how exactly he feels about me. I guess I could ask. I will, once I'm ready. It's not serious. We're just getting to know each other, and Greg's eyebrow lifts, and I crumple, spiritually. I don't know. Maybe. He grins.
"I had a feeling."
"A feeling?"
"He asked lots of questions about you. I thought he was just being his usual, needlessly protective older brother self, but when he got into does Elsie prefer winter or summer territory, I realized it was something else."
I scratch my temple. "You did mention that."
"I did?"
"The tooth. When you..."
"Oh, yeah."
He sighs.
You know, I actually had fun that night. Maybe I should incorporate more recreational drugs into my lifestyle.
Greg, I feel like I unwittingly precipitated you having to come out to Jack. And I'm really sorry. He shakes his head.
What's funny is back at Woodacre, before the tooth decided to rot me from within, I had the thought that it was time for me to just ask Mom to leave me alone. Besides, I could have octuplets and Grandma would probably still leave everything to Monsanto just for spite. And Jack was never the issue. I'd been meaning to tell him for a long time, and it's nice that now he knows and doesn't treat me any different. Nothing's changed, except that he was torn up about not researching the Aero Ace spec before and very, very apologetic for lusting after my girlfriend. He air quotes the last part and then laughs a little. I want to spray about like a morning mist and disappear into nothingness. Greg, I... Honesty. I get it. I think. How you feel about relationships. Because I also am not quite sure what I want. And I'd love to continue being friends. Good. Because now that I almost peed on you, we're bound for life.
He grins.
Oh my God. You know what I just realized?
What?
That if you and Jack work out, Uncle Paul's going to ask you guys for threesomes till the day he dies.
I close my eyes. I might just be the one projectile vomiting this time around. Lunch with George is a totally different beast. I have 1 hour between classes at UMass, and she agrees to meet me outside the building where I teach. Not sure why, then I find her inside my lecture hall 1 minute before my 11 a.m. intro to physics is dismissed. Your essays on modern cosmology are due by... I stumble when she slips inside, her purple coat a flash of color in the dull room. By the end of the week. 2 pages.
Double-spaced?
Someone asks from the huddle of warm bodies that is the last row. Not sure why everyone seems to be willing to sell their soul to sit there, since I don't call on students, and as long as they're reasonably quiet, I pretend not to see when they're doing something else. I once had a guy hem curtains through analytical mechanics and never batted an eye. He got an A-. Good for him, and for his windows.
Single-spaced, 12-point.
Groans arise. Please do not insult my intelligence by using Algerian as a font. And do not set the margins to 1.3 inches, hoping I won't realize because I will check. I will not check. In fact, I will barely skim the essays for keywords while Cece puts on some Noah Baumbach that is, unfortunately, not Madagascar 3. My students would find me so pathetic if they knew how desperately I hustle to give them all an A. And remember, in-text citations only from scholarly sources. Raised hand.
What if my uncle,
like I mentioned, while I'm very happy that your uncle minored in biology at the University of Delaware 23 years ago, I will not accept his Thanksgiving hot takes as a scholarly source. See you all next week.
This looks like a fun way to spend your time on God's green earth,
George tells me after joining me on the podium.
How many of these classes do you teach per week?
Oh, only 4,000, 5,000. She laughs, and I instantly feel guilty. I should be grateful that I have a job. The alternative is hypnotizing my pancreas into thinking it can make insulin and living off Wendy's ketchup packets. But it's not that bad. The students are great, and
Dr. Hanaway?
A sophomore runs toward me, sweater pulled down on her shoulder.
Could you check if this is just a pimple or...
We've been over it, Selena. I'm not that kind of doctor.
Oh, right. My bad.
No problem. Get it checked out at Student Health, okay? I smile. Externally. Internally, it's a bloodbath. Please don't say anything. I beg George.
Let's go.
She closes her hand around my elbow.
You deserve a 12-course meal.
She takes me to a Turkish cafe near campus.
Very well,
she says between dolmas. I think we both know the reason I asked you here. Do we? Of course. She leans forward, hands steepled, eyes burning into mine. Jack's my closest friend. Hurt him, and I'm going full Tanya Harding. Though you're probably not as attached to your knees as Nancy was, so I'll do it on the knuckles. You won't be able to pick up chalk without experiencing agonizing pain. You'll have to hold it between your teeth, and all that hydrous magnesium silicate will fuck up your bowel movements forever. My blood drains. I'm planning to flee to a remote Latvian village, alter my fingertips with a cheese grater, dye my hair black, then blonde, then back to brown again just to throw people off, when George bursts out laughing.
Oh my God, your face!
I blink at her. I'm sorry. That was so inappropriate. I just couldn't pass it up. I blink again. So you didn't want to meet because...
Nope, nothing to do with Jack. You can pull his heart out of his chest, grill it and eat it with a side of creamed corn if you want. I mean, I am fond of him, but relationships are like assholes. Shouldn't go around and smell other people's, yada yada.
Her smile is mischievous.
Sorry?
I sip on my iron. It's okay. Just, Nancy Kerrigan is my cousin. And my father was diagnosed with chalk-induced lung disease. She pales. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. I feel horrible about...
She notices my small smile. You just made that up, didn't you?
I shrug, stealing one of her dolmas. Not only are you perfect for Jack, I think I might like you more than he does, and that's a lot. Anyway, this is why I asked you to meet.
She moves my drink to the side, then sets down a piece of paper.
She sips her water as I read and read, without understanding a single word. Mrs. Whitecotton from second grade would be so disappointed.
Is this,
she nods. It's not, I didn't interview. But you did get to the final round of an MIT interview. Somebody who will remain nameless, let's just call them Jack, told me that over 300 candidates applied. I'm going to trust that your credentials checked out and that you didn't try to spin an associate degree from Bible College into a physics doctorate.
You are offering me a job? In your lab?
As a postdoc. There are two specific liquid crystals projects I'd have you work on.
Jack put you up to this, I say, a little accusing.
Nope. In my relationship with Jack, usually, and by usually, I mean always, I harass him into doing what I want. She must be lying. Listen, thank you. This is kind, but I already told him no. And now that he and I are kind of, it wouldn't be a good idea to...
Wait, she frowns. What do you mean you already told him no?
He already offered me the position.
He what?
George explodes. The waiter and about 15 other patrons turn to us.
Jack offered you a job?
You didn't know?
That is so inappropriate.
She is facepalming hard.
You don't offer a job to your brother's ex, whom you've been gone over for months.
The facepalming graduates to both hands.
God, men. Even the good ones are just...
Are you saying you didn't know?
Nope.
And I didn't tell him I was planning to offer you a job. The funds come from my grants. This is completely separate from my work with him. She sighs heavily. Listen, I'll be real. I didn't know who you were till last week. Aside from the girl Jack talks about when he gets drunk. But I looked up your stuff. Your work is good. And I could really use someone like you on my team.
And before you ask, yes, so could Jack. But I'm better.
She leans forward and points at a line in the contract. It's a 3-year position.
I can pay you 1.5 times the NIH salary.
Liquid crystals are a side project for me, so you'd be leading. First author on all publications. I know you don't have applied experience, but we need someone who knows the theory like the back of their hand. No teaching, no Algerian font, just research. Though if you want to keep pretending that you enjoy it, I'm sure we could find you a class. What is up with all these people calling me on my bullshit lately? Am I suddenly giving off main character vibes? And Jack, in all of this, is a non-entity. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy for you guys. Well, for him. He was starting to look miserable. All that broody, horny, guilty pining. I clear my throat. Would there be health insurance? You don't have health insurance now? I shake my head and she rolls her eyes. Adjuncthood is the fucking 11th plague of Egypt. Yes, of course, health insurance. You won't have to do this weird fake dating thing. Dignity disintegrated. Jack told you about that? Oh, she winces. No. I could read it in your face? Now I'm the one facepalming. Listen, he had to, because I knew you as a librarian. But believe me, there's no judgment here. I put myself through my master's by working as a PA for one of Elon Musk's cronies. And to go back to the job, the most important thing is three MIT theorists are going to retire within the next 5 years. You'd be first in line to replace them. There is no guarantee that we won't be suctioned off the surface of the earth by a demonically possessed vacuum cleaner. She hesitates for a second, as if deciding whether to add something. Elsie, I know it can't be easy, accepting a job from someone who stole the one you wanted. But you got your PhD less than a year ago. You're young to be competing for faculty positions. Honestly, I'm surprised you're adjuncting. Research is your strong suit, and you should be focusing on building your CV, not checking student zits. It makes sense, and I want what she's offering. Enough money to not worry about money, an office to neatly line up my Funko Pops, 3 years of peace of mind. But could I talk it through with my mentor? Sure. Who are they? Dr. Lorando at Northeastern. It's a black cloud moment. One second, George is all confident determination. The next, she physically recoils, elbow knocking against the back of her chair. Christoph Lorando? Does Jack know? Yes. Why? Nothing. She shakes her head. The light in her eyes has dimmed. But you don't need to ask for his permission. This is your future, your career, your decision. My career, yes, but I only have one because Dr. L dragged me out of the pile. When do you need an answer by? I can wait for 2-3 weeks tops. After that, I'll have to start looking around to fill the position. Okay? I nod. Just take the job, a greedy, tired voice inside me insists. It craves those Parmesan crisps that are $5 a pop and is sick of reminding students to stop circling the Scantron bubble instead of filling it in. Steal an ink cartridge from the Boston University printer and get yourself fired. Then you'll have no choice but to go work for George. Dr. L will deal with the decision. So, she asks, aside from offering you a job, what other outrageous and utterly inappropriate things has Jack proposed to you? Marriage ceremony during faculty meeting? Retroactive hyphenation to Hannaway Smith Turner for all your academic publications? Naked cuddles in the MIT library, I almost spit my iron all over her. But it's okay, because she totally deserves it.
19. Impedance. On Friday night, I wear a dress. Nothing fancy. It's a cable knit sweater dress my cousin handed down to Mom because it was too long, and Mom handed down to me because it was too small. I pair it with my one lipstick, my one tube of mascara, my one eye pencil, my one pair of thigh highs. I curl my hair all on my own, cursing softly whenever I burn the side of my hand so Cece won't hear. Listener, she hears anyway.
This is such an M. Night Shyamalan plot twist, she tells me from the kitchen where she's pouring milk into a bowl. Do you see dead people?
Oh my God, am I dead?
Shut up.
I dress up all the time. She waves her spoon at me.
Not for dates.
Actually?
Not for real dates with your professional arch nemesis and brother of the guy you used to fake date, who you wished would incur a death by paper cuts but now like enough to fix that cowlick on the back of your head.
I sigh.
Great synopsis of my life. Thank you. If you ever need a biographer.
She pours Cocoa Puffs into the milk, like the nonsensical creature she is.
Where are you guys going?
Dinner with his friends. He has this really active social circle that makes me look back to that summer when my best friend was a watermelon with googly eyes and feel absolutely devastated.
Third grade?
High school.
Ouch. Well, you have me now.
Ready to call law enforcement if you're not back by 8:30.
May I? I've always wanted to report a missing person.
She holds the spoon like a phone.
No, officer, she didn't have enemies. But she was part of a weird sectarian conflict that only someone with a doctorate in physics could fully grasp. Last seen cavorting with a big dude in a St. Patrick's Day porta potty. Yes, I'll hold.
I laugh. Do text me before you call Liam Neeson. And I might be later than that, but I'm not spending the night.
Ever?
Ever. She gasps. The spoon clatters.
Are you not letting him smack the salmon because of the article he wrote? Is his 17-year-old self cock-blocking him from the past?
I frown at her usage of salmon and at the reminder that, why, yes, the guy I'm going out with did do that. And it's not that I ever forget. It's just that I truly cannot reconcile it. The way Jack is when we're together. Kind and funny and even admiring of my work. And the fact that 15 years ago.
Elsie, is that it?
No, he's just not planning on having sex with me. Her eyes widen.
Are you planning on having sex with him?
Maybe. Probably. No. Should I? Oh, I want to. I'm scared. Maybe. I have to go. I chew on the inside of my cheek and pick up my purse, then stop at the door when Cece says,
Hey, Elsie.
I turn around.
You look pretty tonight.
Her big eyes are warm.
Even more than usual.
I smile. I think I look medium, as usual, but my heart feels open all of a sudden. Open for Cece, this beautiful, odd person who cannot read analog clocks or tell the difference between left and right, who's been sticking with me through thin and thin and thin for the past 7 years. For a moment, all I want is to open my mouth and say, I hate art house movies. Could we watch a rom-com sometimes? Riverdale? Literally any Kardashian show? What comes out is, you look like a weirdo. Pouring milk before the cereal. But I love you anyway. I step out to her middle finger. Then my phone rings, and that's when my night collapses like an accordion. In my defense, I pick up assuming it's Jack, calling to say that he's late, or that I'm late, or that someone hammered him in the frontal lobe and the resulting brain injury helped him realize that he doesn't want to see me ever again. A tragic miscalculation on my part, because
Elsie, finally! You need to come home right now.
Mom?
Lance is now with Dana, and Lucas punched him after the soccer game. Everyone saw.
God.
But I talked to them last week. Lance said he wasn't interested. He lied, Elsie. Oh, I'm disappointed in you for not picking up on it. I exhale, stepping out of the building. He seemed sincere. That's why you need to come home and help me sort this out. I have been so tense and jittery, my poor nerves. Mom, I can't. I don't have a car, for one, and I have classes. Just find a substitute teacher. Mom, I spot Jack's car. It's freezing cold. Every instinct yells at me to first finish my conversation, but I cannot resist getting in. The seat is already heated, Jack's hair still showered damp, curling in soft wisps on his neck. He looks freshly shaved and smells divine, like soap they sell in fancy boutiques, and the hollow of his throat when I slept nestled in his arms. 1 minute, I mouth. He nods. Mom's going on about how Lance is misunderstood. Lucas is sensitive. Dad is busy with work, and the mean ladies at church are sure to be rejoicing in the downfall of the once esteemed Hanaway household. Meanwhile, Jack studies me through my open coat. My dress hits only about mid-thigh when I'm sitting. His eyes follow the line of the hem, stop on my knees, linger for a longer than polite moment. Then his Adam's apple bobs and he turns away. His shoulders rise, then fall, and then he's driving out of the parking lot, looking anywhere but at me. Oh. Mom, I have to go. I'll call them both tomorrow and talk to them out of illegal stuff at the very least. You can't solve this at a distance. I sigh. I'll do my best. Honestly, I'm not sure I can solve this at all. I'm not sure anyone can. Mom gasps, outraged. How can you be so selfish, Elsie? I exhale slowly. I don't think I'm being selfish. I'll help as soon as I'm able, but they're both beyond listening to anything. Unbelievable, she says. And then, nothing. Absolutely nothing. Jack, I say.
Yes?
If I'm talking with someone and out of the blue I hear the busy signal, what does it mean? He gives me a look.
Sounds like you already know.
Oh my God. I'm dumbstruck. My mom just hung up on me. He nods.
Should I be shocked? Is that something that doesn't happen in functional families?
I don't know. Does your father hang up on you?
Does my father have my number?
I laugh, and we exchange a half clueless, half amused glance. Peas in a pod, really. It's a first. My stomach feels heavy. She usually likes me, or pretends to, anyway. Jack looks at me with his resting, I see you face. I'm not used to Mom being this mad at me. It feels terrible, like my entire soul is passing a kidney stone, and suddenly the idea of going out to dinner holds zero appeal. It'll be good, I tell myself. You like his friends. Laughter is the best medicine. Or opiates.
Wanna tell me what happened?
He asks gently, twisting the car through Boston's narrow one-ways. My family is embarrassing.
More so than a dozen people in monogrammed shirts, vultures circling a 90-year-old in the hope that she'll drop dead and a few wads of cash will roll in their direction.
My family would do the same if there were any money to be had. If something happened to my grandma, my brothers would beat each other up over the six-pack of beer she left in the fridge.
Is that what they're fighting about? Beer?
I wish. I roll my eyes. It sounds too stupid to bear. A girl.
A girl?
Well, she's a woman now, but she was a girl when it all began. He frowns.
How old are your brothers?
Older than me. And honestly, I blame this entire mess on traumatic encephalopathy. Both of them were on the football team, getting their brains oatmealed. And there were 70 million cheerleaders they could have, I don't know, played D&D under the bleachers with, but no, they decided to choose the same one. Dana. His mouth twitches.
I don't think that's what people do under the bleachers, Elsie.
They're my brothers, okay? For the purpose of this conversation, they've been fighting over the exclusive right to attend Dana's decoupage classes. And the most ridiculous thing is they fancy themselves in some kind of Legends of the Fall situation. They both think that the big love of their life is doomed to fail because of the machinations of their evil twin. But the truth is, it's so obvious from the outside that no one loves anyone here. Dana gets 90% of her dopamine from watching two guys fight over her. Mom only cares about what her cousin's husband's sister's nanny thinks, and is totally fine with them shanking each other as long as they do it privately. And the sad thing is, Lucas and Lance used to be best friends. They'd have fun trying to convince me that chapstick was made of dromedary sperm and watching me gag. But by now, they've forgotten that they're brothers, forgotten why they liked Dana in the first place, and are just chickens pecking at each other's feed. Like they're two hydrogen atoms and Dana is the electron they constantly steal back and forth. But they're both nonmetals, and even though they wish they could pluck that electron out for good and keep it for themselves, nope, same electronegativity. Sorry, it won't work. And we're back to square one every 6 damn months. And where do you come in? Jack asks. Voice quiet in the car after my bout of yelling. I feel guilty for unloading my entire life story on him, like he's Oprah or something. I should be fun. Mom sends me in to broker peace. I squirm against the seat. Jack's eyes slide to my legs, or maybe they don't. The car is dark and I can't tell.
Why?
What do you mean?
It sounds like your brothers are having issues with one another.
I nod.
Why does she send you?
It's such a why is the sky blue question. Scattering of solar light through the atmosphere, duh. It's my family.
It's your mom's family too. And your dad's and your brother's. And yet, they're fine with not addressing the issue and asking you to take care of it.
He takes a right turn, and the lights of the truck coming toward us hit his jaw at the perfect, most handsome angle. There's the way he looks, his low voice, this smell of his. What does this man want with this? With me? I owe it to them.
You do?
Yes. You don't understand. I gave them lots of problems growing up. My diagnosis was such a hassle for them, and the medical care was so expensive. I owe it to them. My stomach drops. Now Mom is mad at me. I'm an ingrate.
So to summarize, because your pancreas stopped producing insulin when you were a child, you now owe your family a doula-worthy degree of emotional labor?
It sounds horrible, put like that. Downright horrifying. But, yeah, kind of.
What does your family think of your job situation?
Oh, that, I shrug. Not much. I don't plan to elaborate, but he's giving me a raised eyebrow look. And I want him to check the road. I don't tell them about that stuff.
You don't tell them about your life?
It's not what I meant. Though I don't. Just, I'm a first-generation college student.
There are plenty of first-generation academics whose parents are supportive and engaged.
I roll my eyes. Because it's not like I don't know that he's right, or like my heart doesn't feel heavy at the thought. Just go ahead and do it.
Do what?
You're dying to armchair psychologize me. He doesn't even hide how entertaining he finds me.
Am I?
You obviously have an opinion. Just say it.
Say what?
That I don't tell my family about my job because I'm unable to let people know that I'm more than the sum of the ways I can be useful to them. That if I show my true self with my needs and my wants, I risk being rejected. That I've wielded my ability to hide who I am like an emotional antiseptic, and in the process, I've turned myself into a puppet or a watermelon with googly eyes. He maneuvers the car past the glow of the streetlights, and as the seconds pass in silence, I grow afraid that I've said too much, showed too much, been me too much. But then...
Well...
His smile is fond, tender.
My job here is done.
I close my eyes, letting my forehead slide against the window. Hot skin and cold glass. I know how messed up I am.
You do?
Yeah, I don't know how to stop.
But maybe my job is not done, and you should stick around.
I turn to check whether his expression matches his tone, a mix of teasing, sweet, amused, hopeful, other things I can never understand. Then I notice where we are. This is your apartment.
Yep.
He parks. No, he reverse parks. Without sweating or crying or a litany of fuck, shit, fuck. I hate him. Did you forget something?
Nope.
Then why?
I figured we'd take it easy tonight.
Relax. What about your friends?
They can entertain themselves.
But they're waiting for us.
Nah. I texted them.
When?
While you were comparing your brother's relationship to a non-polar covalent bond.
Why?
Because you're obviously upset, and probably had a long week at work. And you had more or less non-consensual lunches with two people whom I know to be giant pains in the ass. I think it's better if we stay in.
He kills the engine.
Just us.
But I look up at his building. Unlike mine, it doesn't look like it's 20 minutes from being condemned and 35 minutes from burning down due to exposed circuitry. What are we even going to do? I hear the smile in his words.
I have a couple of ideas. So, Breaking Dawn's the first one.
What? No, Twilight is the first one. Otherwise, it'd be the Breaking Dawn saga.
Right. Need a blanket?
The lights are low, but Jack tracks my movements as I shake my head and fold my legs underneath me. The hot chocolate he made sits on the coffee table, right next to his Heineken. And I think I saw him raise the thermostat when we first came in, after he noticed me shivering in the chilly hallway. I'm overdressed, overmade up, overcurled for a night on the couch. I don't care, though.
Okay.
He grabs the remote and sits next to me, near, but not threatening. Not close enough to touch, but the cushion shifts and the air around me is warmer, denser. I cannot believe you own a Twilight box set.
I needed to see what the fuss is about.
You bought the Blu-rays. Who buys Blu-rays?
People who can't find the VHS.
I study him, his odd, beautiful eyes. How old are you, precisely?
73.
I laugh. No, for real.
17.
You're 33, aren't you? 32. 34?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Give me a hint. What do you remember from your childhood? Slime? The DSL dial tone? Butterfly hair clips? People dying of the bubonic plague?
You can shit on my Twilight Forever box set all you want. I've seen the way you're eyeing it.
With polite but detached interest.
With shameless, covetous lust for the Edward Goes to Italy featurette.
I laugh again. It's nice, being here where it's warm. So, what do you know about the movies? He drums his fingers on his knee.
They have a blood-curdling CGI kid named Elizabeth.
Renesmee.
And something about sparkly dermatology? Spider monkeys?
There's also vampire baseball.
Encouraging.
Okay, real talk. I turn a little toward him. Are you going to hate this?
Probably, but no more than 2001 A Space Odyssey.
What do you like?
Physics-defying car chases, mostly. People climbing buildings. Space monsters.
He shrugs.
George calls them my white male rage movies.
Okay, well, we can watch one of those. Avengers, Infinity Endgame, or something with The Rock. I mean, what about what you want?
What about that?
We never focus on that.
That's because I have no issues asking for what I want.
That felt like a backdoor brag. I mumble resentfully.
It was fully front door.
I play with the hem of my dress. I understand that this is about helping me reclaim my individuality, but if we're going to be friends, we should do stuff you like too. Otherwise,
Elsie.
Hands on my chin. He lifts it till my eyes are on his.
You're doing it. We're doing it.
I keep looking until I cannot bear it anymore, then free myself. Okay, well, I swallow. Twice. You still didn't need to buy the box set.
I told you,
No, I mean, my cheeks are warm. It's streaming on Netflix and on Prime. I pluck the remote from his hand before he can ask me how I know, and then I ignore the amused way his eyes linger on me and laugh over my hot chocolate at his soft comments.
Very green.
Or,
they go to high school?
Or,
what's up with the ketchup bottle?
About halfway through, I pry myself from the hormonal ride of paranormal teenage angst to look at Jack. He's studying the movie intently, watchfully, like it's a documentary on unparticle physics. I promise I'm not going to quiz you afterwards, I tell him. You can scroll on your phone, fall asleep, roll your eyes.
Is that what people do when you watch Twilight with them?
I don't.
You don't
watch it with anyone. I never spend time with people doing something I unabashedly enjoy. I usually stream a cam version on my laptop and give off a dense, guilty aura. Once CC came in the middle of Eclipse, I turned off the monitor and swore I was masturbating to stepbrother hentai. His mouth curves.
Not Bill Nye.
Didn't think of it. He looks back at the screen. But something's blossoming in my stomach. Something heavy and uncomfortable. And when I say, hey, he turns to me again. Thank you.
For suggesting Bill Nye porn?
No. For, I cannot put it in words. Until I can. For wanting to know me enough to watch my favorite movie with me. I lean forward, fully planning to kiss him on the cheek. But something happens once I'm inside his space, and plans change. I linger. Jack is warm. He smells nice and feels familiar, real, like very little in my life does. So I stay, just because it's that good. And I stay even when he turns toward me and his mouth is so close to mine, I'm almost sure this is going to turn into something else. Into a kiss. He exhales. I inhale. His hand rises, grips the back of my head to hold me still. My eyes flutter closed. A tight flush spreads all over my stomach, skin on fire, heart pumping. Finally, a kiss that I want. And oh, do I want this kiss. I want to...
No,
he says. His lips nearly move against mine.
No.
He lets go abruptly. I open my eyes and he's on the edge of the couch, feet away from me, facing away. Jack? His back is rigid. He rubs his eyes, mumbling something that sounds a lot like,
"Too soon."
And I'm suddenly cold and full of dread. "I didn't mean to." I reach out and lay my hand on his shoulder blade. He instantly moves away, and I realize it's the wrong way to ask for forgiveness for invading his personal space.
"Elsie, I need you to not touch me for a minute."
He goes to stand by the window, rubbing his fingers over his mouth. On the TV, Bella is crying. I feel like crying too, mortified to the core. My embarrassment could power a mid-sized European country. "I'm sorry," I say to his taut shoulders. "Maybe I..." Honesty. When is honesty too much? "I think I may be attracted to you." "Fuck," he breathes out. He turns around, running a hand through his hair. I've never seen him openly show distress before. "Fuck," he repeats softly, and I'm lost. What did I do? I didn't mean to. He takes a breath. Suddenly, he's even more imposing.
"I'm not going to fuck you,"
he promises me quietly, almost talking to himself. I have no idea what to say to that. I am confused, rejected, maybe. But I didn't ask him for that. He's assuming a lot based on a couple of seconds of proximity, and I'm tempted to point it out, which is why I shock myself when what I say is vaguely resentful. "Right. You mentioned before that you're not interested." He lets out a laugh.
"I never said that."
"At the restaurant, you said that you didn't want to have sex with me."
"I said that I wasn't going to have sex with you."
I frown. "That's the same thing."
"It's not."
My mind rushes to catch up. Then it does, and my entire body flushes with heat.
"Is that how you interpreted what I said?"
He sounds incredulous.
"Lack of interest."
I shrug, like it doesn't matter. Like it didn't cut deep.
"You think I don't want to fuck you?"
he says, blunt as always. "Why else?"
"Why else?"
I clear my throat. "Why else won't you?" Jack shakes his head. His jaw has a stubborn set, like this is a rule he's made for himself, something he's thought a great deal about.
"It's what's best for you, for us. Right now."
"I'm sorry, did you—" I clear my throat. "Did you just inform me that we're not going to have sex because it's what's best for us?" He nods once, like he would to a known undisputed fact. Water molecules slow down light. And that's when I stand, indignant. "You understand that this should be the product of a dialogue between two people, right?" I'm barefoot. He's so much taller than me, my neck protests the unnatural angle. "You can't just hand out decisions without explanation."
"I can, actually."
The way he bends down can't be comfortable either. We're sharing about 2 square feet of space, cross-armed, unsmiling. A second ago, we were joking on the couch. What the hell? This is incredibly patronizing. "You can't assume that you know what's best for—"
"Okay, then."
He shifts forward, and I can feel every millimeter.
"How do I make you come?"
I must have misunderstood. "What?"
"What do you like when having sex? What do you want? What are your needs?"
His eyes are pools of black in the dim lights.
"How do I make you come?"
I shake my head. Edward is moving at light speed to save his love, and my mind is as slow as a slug. "Sorry?"
"You said it was patronizing of me not to discuss sex. So, let's talk."
This is the Jack from our first meeting. Challenging, uncompromising, demanding.
Unless it makes you feel uncomfortable. A good sign that maybe it's best for you not to have it either, but...
That's not it, I hurry to say. But maybe it is, a little. I don't talk about sex very much with people. Just Cece, and mostly in terms of what 14th century nuns were supposedly up to when they should have been tending to the herb garden. But it has nothing to do with comfort. We don't talk about sex for the same reason we don't talk about stock dividends. We have very little of it.
Then tell me,
he repeats. His look shifts to something that's not quite daring. Like for once, this is not a power play of his, and he genuinely wants to know.
How do I make you come?
This is such a weird thing to ask. Light bulb on. Oh my God. You think I'm inexperienced. I laugh right in his face. I'm not. I've had sex with JJ like a million times in a million ways. I add, just to get a reaction out of him. But Jack's reaction is infuriatingly non-existent. You think I'm lying?
I don't. If you told me you're a card-carrying member of that Orgy of the Month club, I'd believe you. But since you have all that experience, you'll have no problem telling me. How do I make you come?
I open my mouth and immediately close it.
I'm waiting, Elsie.
I hate him when he's like this. Just smug and merciless and all-seeing and...
Still waiting.
I look down at my feet, the stockings sheer around my toes, and all of a sudden I'm feeling just... I'm embarrassed. I have no idea what to tell him, and for a second I consider lying. Pretending that I'm a fucking sex goddess. 20 orgasms and a trench coat. But Jack is lie repellent, and he'd know, and it'd be even more mortifying than the truth. I have no idea how he can make me come. My mind turns to JJ, and here's a truth I'm not going to admit out loud in this fancy open-plan apartment. I don't even know if I have the capacity to like sex. I never wondered, because me enjoying something was never a priority. Is this something you do with every girl you sleep with? I ask bitterly. An entrance exam?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Other times it's more trial and error.
Something heavy twists in my stomach. And after that?
After that, I do what they like. Have them do what I like if they're up for it.
Jealousy. That's the feeling. I'm jealous of these unnamed girls. In my mind, they all look leggy, stunning, smart, worthy of being fucked by Jack. Unlike me. I turn away and step to one of the million windows. I don't know how he stands it, the nakedness of this place. It's a fishbowl. He needs curtains.
Elsie.
He's behind me. I see his reflection in the glass, holding my eyes like in a mirror.
You have a pattern of doing things you don't enjoy for the sake of others. And I need to be sure the two of us don't fall into it. I need to know that you're not initiating anything with me because it's something you think I expect. And I need to be certain that you don't feel like you have to be some fantasy lay whose only focus is my pleasure. That you're in a place where you're able to acknowledge and articulate your needs.
I let my forehead fall against the glass, watching my eyes cross over my nose.
You should tell me what you're thinking,
he says after a while, much more gentle than a minute ago. Why?
Because I want to know,
he sighs.
And you promised you'd try.
Right. Yes, I did do that. Stupidly. I'm thinking, I turn around, drum my nails against the windowsill, and close my eyes when I can't bear to look at Jack. What am I thinking at any given time? The more I try to grasp my own mind, the faster it goes blank. I'm thinking that two things can be true at once. You want to protect me and also do it in a patronizing way. I'm thinking that by trying to respect me, you ended up making a decision for me, like everyone else before you. I'm thinking that I don't really know you, not yet. But sometimes when I'm with you, I feel like you know me better than I do myself. I swallow. But I'm also thinking something else.
What?
I open my eyes. I want him. For myself. I have no idea in what shape, timeline, texture, but I do. I'm thinking that I don't know how you can make me come. But it would be fun to find out together. I'm exhausted from all the thinking, overthinking, rethinking, unthinking. So for the first time in my life, I just let my mind white out. I step out of my head and into my body, savor the absence of formulas and prediction models, and just do it. Grab the hem of my dress, take it off in one fluid motion, drop it until it crumples at Jack's feet. It's a big gamble. I've never done anything this brave, stupid, reckless before. But this is Jack, having so many of my firsts. And it doesn't even matter if the second my clothes are off, I'm all out of courage. I stare at the fabric, too scared to move my eyes anywhere else, letting the tension stretch, the pressure build, till I hear a low,
"Elsie."
I glance up. I'm not insecure about my body, probably because I am so busy being insecure about every little thing I do, say, broadcast. But if I were, if I had any doubts about whether I'm attractive, pretty, desirable enough to him, they'd dissolve like sugar in water. Jack's cheeks are pink. His pupils fat, fixed at some point between my belly button and the elastic of my panties. At his sides, both his hands twitch, then clench into fists.
"It's too soon,"
he says again.
"We should wait till you're more comfortable around me."
"I'm at my most comfortable around you," I say. And then, because honesty. And also at my least. But that's because you're an asshole, and unlikely to ever change. He exhales a sharp laugh. I look at him looking at me, thinking that I might win this if I play it right. And then he says,
"If we need rules."
And it occurs to me that I've already won.
I need rules,
he says firmly, in a tone that brokers no objection. He's staring at the swell of my breasts over my bra, mapping the edge of the simple black cotton.
"You promise me you will
stop you if I need to. Tell the truth. Be honest." I nearly roll my eyes. He's right, but I'm impatient. Hot, tingling with a sense